Welcome to the Liberators Podcast, a podcast designed to promote physical, psychological, spiritual, and financial freedom. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Liberators Podcast. Today's guest was born and raised in Los Angeles, California. She is currently a second-year clinical psychology doctoral student at Midwestern University in Glendale, Arizona. At Midwestern, she volunteers and holds the liaison position for the school's multidisciplinary volunteer outreach program, HOME. She also serves as class representative in the student government and is involved in several student organizations, holding two secretarial leadership positions. She is a 2017 cum laude graduate of Xavier University of Louisiana with a Bachelor of Science in Psychology with a minor in Chemistry. While at Xavier, she was involved in several student organizations, including Gospel Choir, DSBS Peer Mentoring Program, Nubian Expressions Theater Club, and other community service opportunities. After completing her undergraduate education, she took a gap year to gain more clinical experience. During her gap year, she worked as a behavioral health technician with children with autism spectrum disorder. She volunteered as a crisis line counselor at the D.D. Hirsch Suicide Prevention Center. Currently in her Psych-D program, as part of her clinical practicum requirements, she is conducting individual and group therapy with adult SMI, serious mental illness populations. For her dissertation, she is composing a suicide prevention program for African-American youth due to the rapid increase in suicidal deaths in the past decade within this population. In her free time, she enjoys relieving stress through spending quality time with friends and family, cooking, and nail painting. Her ultimate goal in life is to open her own private practice that mostly caters to ethnic minorities and underserved communities in hopes to help break down mental health stigma and other barriers to mental health care. She also strives to be a role model for young women and leave a mark on this world, just as her late mother did and was to her. Please join me in welcoming a very special guest for today, Ms. Catherine Nash. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Today, our conversation will be centered on addressing the stigma of suicide within the African-American community. And before we kind of get into that, I usually like to go through just talking about, you know, who you are as your current endeavors, just letting some of our listeners know on things that you also have planned in the near future.
All righty. So currently, like you just said, I'm in school right now in graduate program, and I'm taking both classes and started my practicum clinical work this year for the first time, which was exciting. And also just keep busy with others. Student organizations as well, but what's most interesting right now in my education, I'm working on my dissertation, but I'm still in the early stages, I would say, as I've recently chosen my faculty committee and finalized my topic on focusing on the rapid increase of suicide deaths among African American youth. And it's not really going to be your traditional empirical dissertation because I'm choosing the program development format. So basically, it's more of an evidence-based hypothetical treatment plan that can actually be utilized in the real world if I wanted to publish afterwards. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be pretty much titled like Suicide Prevention Program for African American Youth. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much what's going on.
Okay.
But like, as opposed, like looking into like what type of research I'm doing currently, I'm just gathering supportive data and empirical evidence as to why the program is necessary and looking at pre-existing programs to identify areas of improvement that I can implement in mine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What kind of research do you feel that you've been able to do that has been, you know, very impactful for what you're choosing to do your thesis on?
Like what, can you repeat that question? Sorry.
Like what kind of research have you done that you feel like has been very impactful towards your thesis?
Well, just currently just looking into the lack of research that is. So just mm-hmm. going over like different literary works that have addressed this topic and mainly just noticing that there's very few research articles on this topic. So I think just gaining more knowledge of the lack of awareness that's out there is pretty important. But I haven't done any like other research assignments, if that's what you were asking.
Okay. Why do you feel like it's such a lack of, you know, evidence out there, research studies on this topic?
Just because this subgroup of people is just fear research in many different areas of life have just been performed for this group of people. But I think it's also because there's such a main focus on white people in regards to suicide prevention, since they are typically the highest group to die by suicide. But with African Americans, we are the group that are actually close to the bottom of ethnic groups who don't die by suicide. But what's concerning to me is that recently in the past decade, it's been the second leading cause of death for African American adolescents, with an increased rate of 118%. So that's concerning, how like we're still at the very low ranking, but all this is still happening. And it's just not proportionate and needs to be addressed ahead of time, like other reasons for other ethnicities are, you know, just to like balance it out. But unfortunately, it's just a reality that ethnic minorities aren't necessarily researched into a lot.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think that a lot of times with mental health, with certain disorders and things of that nature, Black communities don't always get the light that we per se need. And I think sometimes that's due to our communities as well, you know, creating this stigma around things such as mental health and suicide.
Exactly.
I think, you know, just the way that I used to think about suicide, for sure. I guess I was raised in a culture that was kind of taught that, you know, suicide was something that weak people did. You know what I mean? That to do suicide was taking the easy way out and things of that nature. But I think that the older that I got, the more educated that I was on the issue of suicide, I started to realize all of the different factors that we don't see that play into, you know, somebody wanting to commit suicide. It could be that person's, they could have been in abusive homes. They could have, you know, went through very, you know, trying times in their lives that really would cause a person to feel that the better alternative would be to end their life. But I guess, you know, looking at it from the outside in and not really being in an abusive situation, you kind of have a lack of sensitivity towards issues like that. But I think, the more awareness that, you know, is placed on that, I think that the better that, you know, and I think it's really great that you're trying to catch the solution, like even though they're low relative to other, you know, communities and groups, you know, I think also too, you know, we're smaller in number as well. So when you look at impact for the group or something like that, then those numbers could be very high. But in your opinion, why would you say there's a stigma that exists about suicide in the Black community?
I really think it's like exactly what you just said. Like many people in the African American community view mental illness as a weakness, not just suicide, just mental illness in general. And like people have always labeled it as like a white people problem, unfortunately. And I really think it's due to the lack of empathy that exists in our culture. And it's just more of focusing on that common value of strength and survival. And I feel like it's also a matter of respect, where people think, oh, if I'm perceived as weak, I'm perceived as, I won't get the respect that some people are born with.
I agree.
And, you know, we're always told that we have to work twice as hard. And that's true. But I feel like the focus needs to switch from, instead of surviving, we need to switch to thriving. And if someone is recognized as strong, if they seek help rather than avoiding it. But unfortunately, stigma leads to avoidance, and people need to realize it's okay to experience every emotion that you're going through based off of mental illness or trauma or just abuse, anything that happens in your life, because we're all human at the end of the day. We all go through similar mental health issues, but in the Black community, it's just ignored in a way, creating that stigma.
Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, a lot of families, like, even though a person may not commit suicide, doesn't mean that they don't have mental problems. You know, there's this wide array, you know, of this wide spectrum of what a mental illness can be. You know, you have people with schizophrenia, and I didn't notice that, you know, until I actually started studying it, that, you know, people, you grow up with people, or, you know, you may be exposed to people through church, through community involvement and things like that. And I think that, you know, the common thing for our community to say is, oh, that person's just crazy. Like, they always been like that.
Yeah.
You know, but that doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
I think
it's that ignorance.
Right. It's like we try to make light of it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a dangerous thing to do, because then the next person that comes along, they just get labeled as crazy, but there's never any diagnosis. And nobody ever reaches out to give that person the help that they may need. You know, and I think that that's an important thing to do, is to always reach out, always really want to, you know, uplift people that have problems, you know, because problems are a serious thing. And I definitely feel that, you know, our community, like you said, doesn't place enough emphasis on it. And a lot of times we don't have the resources within our communities, you know, because our communities are riddled with poverty, bad health, bad nutrition. So a lot of times we're trying to focus on building those issues, you know, putting people in better housing, giving people better access to food, and, you know, mental illness, because, like you said, the numbers may look a certain way, that kind of gets put on the back burner. You know, we'll deal with that when we can. But I think an important thing to realize is that if a person, if their mental health is good, then the chances of them being a contributing, strong member of society, that those, you know, percentages increase as well.
Exactly. And you're absolutely right about the, like, external barriers along with the internal barriers that stigma presents. So, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What are some factors that you feel contribute to suicide?
Well, I feel like there are so many risk factors out there that some people aren't even aware of. But it's like no main one, if that makes sense. There's no popular risk factor that, you know, okay, they have this. Or, but because it just varies by individual person and also demographic, I would say. But a few common ones I would say would just be mental health issues in general, like depression or anxiety or trauma, or even people who have a family history of suicide or having a loved one close to them who had died by suicide as well. If you've had previous attempts in the past in your own life, that's another risk factor. Stress from, you know, just unemployment or abuse or relationship problems or bullying. But specifically in the Black community, I feel like we have more culturally specific stressors that may lead to suicide ideation, more like racial inequality or discrimination, police brutality instances, stuff like that. So it really varies by individual and demographic. But unfortunately, these risk factors can lead to poor coping mechanisms sometimes, and basically improving the likelihood of suicide ideation to actually occur. And a lack of social support as well will also be considered a risk factor as well.
Yeah.
So stigma plays a role within that. So if you have a community of people who don't listen to you or not hearing you, it's kind of detrimental to the whole problem. Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, sometimes a person who has suicidal thoughts can be isolated.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's almost like this political correctness in society. Like, nobody wants to really talk about the issues of suicides until, you know, it strikes their family. You know, then everybody wants to be serious about it and you know, take up arms to really fight this problem. But I would say, you know, even if you look at social media, I think sometimes social media can also contribute to, you know, the thoughts of suicide, because we're constantly evaluating ourselves based on other people and we don't know their situation. And, you know, we're like, man, our life may not, you know, and our eyes line up to their life, which causes us to feel, you know, this identity problem, this identity crisis. You know, but like you said, it's so many factors that, you know, can contribute to a person feeling that they want to end their life. And that's such a serious thing. Because I think, you know, if anything, you know, suicide prevention can, you know, to me, in my opinion, be put above something like, you know, heart disease or something like that, because, you know, there's no coming back from suicide. Like, you know, that's it. You know, a person who has a heart attack, they can get a stent. You know, there's therapy for people that, you know, get sick or break bones, even cancer sometimes, you know, with the recent advances in technology. You know, people can come back from having, you know, some of the worst forms of cancer. But, you know, with suicide, and too, sometimes, like, you don't really know the extent of a person's mental health until it's too late. You know, so I think, you know, coming up with a stronger system to be able to identify that, creating different organizations, help organizations that, you know, can help people. Do you feel like that's something that has contributed to your understanding of mental health, being able to work with that help desk?
Maybe to help what?
Being able to work with, like, the helpline.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, when I was volunteering there, I would get a range of calls from many different people, many different backgrounds. And the intensity would vary for each call. You know, like, some people would call in the crisis line and just have, like, a very low risk setting. For example, like, they'll just be saying, oh, I had a thought of killing myself today. Mm-hmm. But then we do a whole risk assessment to examine, like, where they're at on actually completing that act or that thought. But then, like, some people, they would call and they're, like, literally having a gun in their lap ready to just end it all. And so it would just really vary and be really drastically different and just interesting to help be there for somebody to help identify, like, why they're feeling this way and what's a different way they can handle it besides killing themselves, but still not shaming them for thinking this way, since it needs to be normalized among everyone. But what you said about it, like, being some mental health being compared to, like, physical health, though, a lot of people don't realize that there's, like, no magic fix to having suicidal ideation for certain people. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like managing symptoms of, like, cancer, for example, like you were saying earlier. You can, like, get chemotherapy and all this stuff, but, like, you never know if the cancer is going to come back. Mm-hmm. But the same with, like, people with suicidal ideation. You can, like, give them therapy, give them all these things, but you cannot guarantee that that they will never have that thought again. So people really just need to, like, treat mental health issues similarly to these physical health issues as well, mm-hmm. in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that that's something that doesn't get the attention that it needs, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, we overlook it, you know, because it's not in our face every day. You know, we see obesity in our face every day. And we see, but I think sometimes we can see, like, those symptoms of depression, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes, like I said, I myself have been insensitive to it sometimes. It's just being like, oh, they just need to get over that. You know, that's not a proper way to deal with that, because you really don't know. Like, sometimes a person can be doing it for attention. They could possibly be doing things for attention. I feel like that exists, but I'm not the person to say that, you know, because I think that every time a person says something about suicide, that should be taken seriously. We shouldn't take it, oh, they're always saying that, they're always playing that game, blah, blah, blah. And I think that because of that, some people retreat to themselves to deal with their thoughts of suicide. They don't want to talk about it because, like you said, they can be ridiculed by a family. So if they feel that, you know, their most inner circle, their family, the most sacred thing to them, the closest thing to them, the thing that they value, doesn't deem their issue as serious, that they don't care about their issue, then, you know, sometimes they can turn even worse things to cope, such as, you know, drugs and alcoholism, you know.
Right. And there's even some, you know, personality disorders out there in which people, like, do these, like, attention-seeking behaviors. So it's hard to determine whether or not they're doing this for attention, like you're saying, or if they're doing it because they're really feeling suicidal. Mm-hmm. So it is hard to determine whether or not, like, people are genuine whenever they express the thoughts. But like you said, no matter what, it needs to be taken seriously in every case, just for precautionary measures. Mm-hmm. Because it'd be bad if you were not to take it seriously and then it would actually happen. And then, you know, like you said, there's no going back. So,
and like you said, I think that's what makes you know, this idea of suicide so complicated, because it can vary based on person to person. Literally every person can have a different, you know, expression of it. It may be that person that they look happy every day, you know, but they're dying on the inside. So it's like, it doesn't look like one thing, you know, and I think that that creates something that's even more complicated. So you can't just say, oh, well, let me go, you know, prescribe them 10 milligrams of whatever, you know what I mean, for them to deal with this problem, because you may not even know that the problem exists, you know. For a good example, somebody like Robin Williams, I would expect for him to be the happiest man ever. You know what I mean? Like, for him to make people laugh for years and years and years, and him seeming to be happy. Sometimes that just isn't always the case, and you don't know what a person's feeling. So think, you know, creating something that, you know, everybody can say, okay, I can go here to look at this to get the help that I need, because sometimes people are just afraid to reach out to get that help. You know, I've been there myself with dealing with, you know, ideas of being sad, you know, and just wanting to talk to somebody about that. I was reluctant to do that because I was raised in a culture that taught that men don't, you know, is this idea of just being strong, what it means to be strong, what it means to be a man, you know, deal with your problems, suck it up, blah, blah, blah. But what I find to be true is that over time, you're only suppressing those emotions. You're not really, you know, they're not going anywhere. You know, and over time, they come back to me, it seems like, with a vengeance. So something could spark you off, something could, you know, excite that emotion in you that you thought that you had suppressed. So I find more now, you know, the idea of getting therapy and actually talking to somebody through your problems, because talking to a therapist, talking to a psychologist, that's another thing that, you know, I feel that the Black community, I think some of us are starting to become enlightened to understand the value that a therapist has. But for a lot of us still, I don't need no therapist, you know. What a therapist gonna do for me? I know my problems. I talk to God every day, you know. And I think, you know, exactly, you know, and just like, I think that just like we, you know, view, you know, having a broken leg and going to the doctor, you know, with your mind, you need to go and, you know, do some updating and health and maintenance on that as well. And I think that some people go their whole lives never having any maintenance done to their mind, their state of being. And then they wonder why they live their whole lives sad, their whole lives, you know, attached to things that happened 40 years ago, never letting that go. You know, I've seen that so many times because, you know, we just have this reluctancy to get help. And I think that, you know, with mental health, there's a lot to be said about the problems, but very few people are taking the route that you're taking to actually find solutions. You know, things that can be created to actually help people instead of talking about people. Because, like I said, a lot we good for that too. Just talking about people and not, you know, giving them any type of help. What are some of the solutions you feel?
Honestly, like, because, you know, therapy isn't for everyone, right? But I'm still going to promote it because, you know, it doesn't hurt to try it. But therapy can just offer that listening ear you may not have in your life. And, like, depending on what specific, like, orientation that therapist has, like if it was cognitive behavioral, for example, they can help you identify your maladaptive thinking processes and help you change the way you view things or change the way you think about certain situations to help improve your overall mental health. Or like there's just other different ways of psychodynamics, for example, when you're looking into different patterns in your life since childhood and how they affect how you act now. So, you know, like there's just different ways of approaching one's issues that people aren't really aware of that exist in therapy. Like people, like you said, people don't want to go. It's like, oh, I know my problems. I don't need someone to tell me.
Right.
But it offers that sense of no, it's like no judgment. Like, it's literally their job to sit and talk with you, and they're going to try and work the best for you. But, you know, therapy's not for everyone, and that's fine. But there's other ways to help solve these issues of mental health and suicide by, like I said earlier, just normalizing that it's okay not to be okay. You know, we just need to be able to have safe spaces, and judgment-free zones to support one another. You know, it's important to check on the strong people in your life and just be there for them. And if someone does find the courage to come and talk to you about something, you can be that listening ear for them that they would get in therapy, but, you know, maybe they don't want to go to therapy. So some people think, like, oh, it's too hard to support people when they're down, or I don't do well with people who cry and stuff like that. But it's the simplest thing is just providing that emotional support. And that can just come from supportive statements like, what can I do for you today? Or I'm here for you, or you're not alone. Or I may not be going, know what you're going through, but I got you. Like, just sitting with them, you know, mm-hmm. that serves as support. But, you know, people can also rely on different protective factors as well, like through their faith, you know, because some people say just pray about it and all your problems will go away. But, you know, prayer is great, but so is reaching out to others and building that social support. But those are the main things I would say are the solutions. And the main thing is just being able to talk about it without feeling judged.
I agree. I think, you know, just being open, I think that's something that, you know, we've tried to do, like, with our, you know, our line brothers and things like that, is just talking, you know, having conversations that go beyond sports, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And instead of saying, you know, this person did this on the court or whatnot, like, how you doing? You know, like, how's your life? You know what I mean? How you feel? Like, you good? You know, actually just, I think it's just caring, you know, just just actually being invested in what another person is feeling, because I found times where I've had conversations with them and, you know, the situation that I'm dealing with, they've already been in, and vice versa, you know, mm-hmm. so them giving me that perspective of having went through something and just being that listening ear, giving good advice, you know, I think has saved me a lot of times from going through the heartaches of feeling that I'm alone and doing something. You know, I think that a lot of times too, people just feel like they're alone. They feel like they're the only person that has that problem. And that's just not true. You know, we all deal with some form of self-doubt, you know, some form of, you know, broken identity in some type of way, you know. And I think that it's important for us to always be looking or just being aware of where we are currently, and also just, you know, normalizing those conversations. I think that's very important, especially among African-American men, you know, just talking about things beyond the norm, you know what I mean? Or just talking about things as far as your relationship, you know, your relationship with your parents, like just going beyond the surface. And I can definitely say having a cohort that you feel like is behind you, you know, having people that you feel like support you, people that you feel like you can talk to without being judged, I think is a big thing, you know, because sometimes we judge based on what we know before we even listen to what a person has to say. You know, sometimes we're just formulating these opinions of the way that it's supposed to be. Well, that just may have been how it manifested itself in your life. That doesn't mean that, you know, is concrete or permanent way of dealing with a certain situation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the organizations or resources that you feel are doing a great job at getting people help with suicide?
I really believe that, like, the crisis line that I volunteered with is the best thing out there right now, because I really think it's helping people when they're in that dark moment, especially for those who, like, aren't really going to seek out professional help. Because I feel like the crisis line itself helps you, it's like a bridge into seeking that professional help. Like, it will help convince you in a way to get the help you need. Because, you know, it's nationwide, it's free, it's confidential, except for certain issues for mandated reporters. But you can literally just talk to someone and they will hear you and empathize with you with everything that you're going through. And they will be with you in that dark place for as long as you need to. And I want people not to understand or think of it as therapy, because it's not. It's more of just crisis counseling, helping you in the moment. But for those who need therapy afterwards, they will provide mental health resources for you at the end of the call if you're interested, stuff like that. So it just helps you figure out the next steps in order to better yourself. And for those who are suicidal, it helps them discover other options other than self-harm. And, you know, for those who don't like to talk on the phone, they also have a text line. So I like how that's available, especially for the younger generation, you know, because a teenager is probably not going to talk to an adult on the phone, especially an adult they don't know. But they will definitely be more likely to text help or do the online chatting. But I think that's the major thing. But I think also just in the media per se, there's celebrities out there promoting awareness now. Mm-hmm. You know, they're opening up about their own mental health issues. Taraji P. Henson just founded her Boris Lawrence Henson Foundation, some mental health organization. You know, there's other celebrities coming out with their issues, and even professional sports organizations are hiring mental health professionals to look after their athletes. You know, and in more community settings, there's social workers helping people who need access to care and everything. Like, there's support out there everywhere doing a great job at helping people in their time of need. And I just feel like just keep the more promotion of it, the more normalized it will be. And I always love whenever I watch like a TV show that had a suicidal character. And I love how at the end of every episode, they'll put like the suicide hotline on there for people to reference to. Mm-hmm. I always think that's important because, you know, you don't expect that resource to be available to you after watching the TV show, but then it's there for the public to view and they'll like write it down. So like, it's great. Then they'll seek the help they need. But that's what I would highlight, I guess, as one of the organizations.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, that's important. For people to have something that they feel like they can reach out to. I think also making mental health a part of, you know, I can't really think about how to say this, but, you know, part of a daily, like you do an annual checkup. Mm-hmm. Having, you know, just people check you out as far as like how your mental is, which is how you're thinking, having that be, you know, as mainstream as a physical exam, you know. And I think, like you said, that's something that's just so overlooked, and a lot of people don't know where they can get their help. And also, I think, you know, watching different movies and things like that, people who have those same emotions are able to identify. And like you said, putting that, you know, that message that you can go here to get help sends them directly to where they need to go. You know, I think it's such an important thing because, you know, like you said, we just oftentimes, like I know in my community personally, I don't really know of a psychologist or a therapist that I could go to directly. And also, I think it's a trust thing. You know, I think that the more that African Americans enter into mental health, psychology, therapy, the more aware we will become, and the more the less resistance we'll have to going. Mm-hmm. You know, because you identify with that person that looks like you, that thinks like you, that has had similar experiences, that know what it's like to be Black in America and the strain that that can place on your mind. You know, they come from a stage of true empathy, of experiencing it. You know, because explaining that to somebody else who, you know, isn't Black is difficult because they have their own individual experience, and they may come into that meeting or that interaction with, you know, preconceived notions as to what is causing this person's problem, you know, and what could be causing that person's problem is totally outside of, you know, what they're thinking. You know what I mean? So I think it's important, you know, having more Black psychologists, Black therapists is, it's a great thing to see, because I think that the more we're able to build that, the better off we'll be as a community, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, it's part of the normalizing process as well. Like, you see someone who looks like you working in this field where Black people are underrepresented, you know, it's going to be more eye-opening for them. It's like, oh, maybe I should give this a try. And just stuff like that. But,
have you noticed that in, like, your interactions, you know, in the clinic or things like that, that when you interact with, let's say, for instance, Black people or the younger generation or things like that, that they're more receptive towards you than to other people?
Well, in Arizona, there's not that many Black people that come across. I don't know if I could even answer that question. Because, like, the clients I'm working with now, like, none of them are Black. The majority of them are white. So I maybe in my future I could answer that question better, but. Yeah,
is that something that you plan to do, to go back into communities that are Black or are, you know, minority?
Absolutely. Yeah, my goal in the future is to literally work with underserved ethnic minority groups to help continue to break the stigma. Because I feel like right now where mental health is at, it's getting there. Slowly but surely, but it's getting there. And I really just want to be a part of the people who help continue that and help it doesn't, like, fall backwards into, like, historical stigma related issues and everything. Like, I want to break that cycle of mistrust that the Black community has gone through with just medical treatment in general. I feel like mental health still is under that realm of healthcare, so it's hard for people to be trustful, but I really want to help.
Why is it so important for you to help you know, minorities, people of color, help them, you know, battling their mental illness?
I think it's mostly because me personally, whenever I hear people discuss mental health, like Black people in my life discuss mental health in a negative way, not saying they all do, but those who do, and like they, when they don't put any value to it, it makes my blood boil. Like, be real, like, even though, like, I can't say that I've gone through extensive, like, mental health crisis in my life, I still know that when I am emotional, I would like that support, and I don't like it when people are talking about it being, like, just something to get over, because it's not that hard. It's not that easy, I mean. Mm-hmm,
for sure.
So I just feel like that, like, my purpose in life is to, like, be there for people who want that support, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Definitely. So, I really think in our community, that's what really needs to be addressed. But it's not going to happen overnight, that's for sure.
What do you feel like you can do when a person isn't, doesn't seek the help, but you know they have a issue?
If they don't want the help?
Mm-hmm. Like, there's obvious that they're dealing with some form of mental health issue, but they don't want the help. What do you feel is our role in that?
I think just making the options available to them will be great. But at the end of the day, they're their own person. They're going to have to do whatever they feel is best for them. But as long as they have the resources and the availability of what can be there for them, then that's fine. But, like, just when finding a therapist, for example, I always advise people just go when you feel ready. Like, don't feel pressured to go just because someone told you to go. You really have to just go at your own pace, because entering therapy or any mental health thing is just like trying on a pair of shoes. Like, it's gonna take some time until you find the right pair of shoes that you really like, or mm-hmm. that fit perfectly or don't hurt your feet. So getting out of that comfort zone of you avoiding the problems or experiencing these symptoms is really just gonna take time. But if you have those resources, it'll be available for that when you finally have that courage to, you know, seek help.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, everyone is their own person and has to make their own decisions. You can't force people to get help, because then they won't be receptive of the treatment, you know? Mm-hmm. And that just won't produce the outcomes that are necessary.
Right. Then it could give a person anxiety too. Like,
exactly. And it'll just lead into more issues.
Exactly. So. And I think sometimes, like, we do that. Like, I could say, like, it's it's like an extreme within the Black community. It's like it's not enough or it's too much. Like, you know, you need to get help. Like, you need this help right now. Like, you know, and people are like, okay, like now they feel pressure and, you know, they're not really there to seek help. They're just there to, you know, avoid conflict with another person or, you know, and that, like I said, like you said, it has to be genuine help. And I think that when you give genuine help, people feel that, you know, people know when that's real.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What's a motto that you live by?
I like to live by a motto saying that growth begins when comfort ends. I just shared this with my cohort the other day. Because just with, for my life personally, I just know that, you know, life can be really uncomfortable at times in specific situations. And in the past, I would always look at them, those situations, with fear, because I hate change still to this day. I'm still growing. but because it's just hard to leave one's comfort zone, especially like I was speaking earlier. But I'm starting to realize the more I grow, the more I mature, that this sense of discomfort is a transitionary phase. Because once you reach like those new experiences, they're going to shape you and you're going to really discover what life is really about because you've stepped out of that comfort zone. So I just think growth is the ultimate goal of discomfort. And it's been helping me, especially doing grad school right now, because there's been a whole lot of change every quarter.
Yeah.
So I just like, it's important just to change like your cognitive approaches and outlooks on different scenarios, because it can really just impact the way you view life. And then ultimately, once you get that control, you can manage the stresses in your life and increase your mental health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just, you know, a lot of us just want to commit to this idea of just being comfortable all the time, and it just don't exist. Like, there's always going to be something that, especially if you're trying to excel, there's something that's meant to stretch you. You know what I mean? So being committed to that growth process, being committed to being great and doing things, you know, that are great. You know, you being in this program right now is going to stretch you. Going to a community is going to stretch you again. Like, it's just always going to be something that challenges you to be a stronger person, a better person, you know. So that's definitely a great motto.
Thank you. I forgot where I heard it from, but I heard it and it stuck with me, so that's all that matters.
For sure. Well, we certainly thank you for stopping by to the Liberators Podcast and giving us a lot of those gems and, you know, just I guess just an understanding of that we don't have to be negative about suicide. We don't have to look at it with, you know, a stigma. We don't have to judge people for it. And in fact, we should really support people based on that, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know if you wanted to provide any contact information or maybe a website for listeners to reach out and support you, any initiatives that you're possibly a part of or anything like that. The Liberators Podcast definitely want to do what we can to spread that message and also have people support you and get the help that they need.
Okay. Yeah. People can reach me by, through my personal email, ccnash94@gmail.com, or just find me on Facebook under Catherine Nash. But I also want to give the crisis line number and the crisis text line number for those who might need it after listening in. So the crisis line number will be 1-800-273-8255. And the text line would be 741-741.
Mm-hmm. And they can call this at any time.
Yes, 24 hours, 7 days a week.
All righty. Well, we thank you and thank everybody for tuning into yet another episode of the Liberators Podcast.
Thank you.
If you're still here, you're enjoying the Liberators Podcast. We ask that you would share and rate us on your favorite listening platform. Also, follow us on Instagram at the Liberators Podcast. If you would like to support the development of this podcast financially, please follow the support link from Anchor in the show notes. Thank you for your time. Stay liberated. From yours truly, your host, Jeremy Shropshire.